Now, I'm interested in the manufacturing process. I could imagine that, you know, vats of boiling sugar could potentially be quite dangerous. I mean, do you recall any of the risks involved with the process?
I don't have any memory of it, anything being risky at all, but presumably it was risky. The sugar was boiled in large, I think, copper
vats,
yes, over a gas fire. And then when it got to the right temperature, my father would then pour the mixture onto steel slabs for it to partially cool. And then when it was still very flexible and still warm but not too hot to handle, my father would then cut it up into rectangular slabs and feed it through the brass rollers, which had a series of holes in them, or semicircular holes, and so then the whole sheet of sweets would come out, all connected together, of course, thinly connected, and then with a shake they would all break up into little spheres. That's how the boiled sweets were made.
Yes, and it was the temperature was quite critical when to transfer the mixture from the vat to the steel greased slab. And I remember one time my father had very good health when he was running the business, even in his older years. But one time, the only time I remember, he got sick, and one of our older brothers, David, was volunteered to go to the business and manufacture a certain product that was running short of, that the business was running short of, and it was involved quite a lot of sugar. But unfortunately, he misjudged the critical temperature when to pour this confection, and the whole thing had to be dumped. So it was remarkable that my father was able to be the sole energizer of the manufacturing side.
Yes, well, of course, he had a thermometer.
Yes.
To measure the temperature, the right temperature for the mixture to be poured out. Because when you're boiling sugar, the temperature goes up much beyond boiling point of water. It becomes very hot, but it's very important that it doesn't become too hot, or else it could be burned. And there is an interesting story about that. On one occasion, my father made a mistake and slightly burnt a whole batch of boiled sweets that were called brandy balls, peppermint flavored boiled sweets. And so this batch was slightly burnt, and my father said to our brother David, who was helping, "Well, we better sell these at a cheaper price." They were normally sold at 6 ounces a shilling, and Dad said, "We better sell them at 7 ounces a shilling because they're slightly burnt." And my brother David, who had a very adventurous and innovative ideas on all sorts of things, said, "No, we'll sell them slightly dearer at 5 ounces a shilling." And unusually for Dad, he agreed. So we had some brandy balls still at 6 ounces a shilling, and this new batch, which was labelled burnt brandy balls, at 5 ounces a shilling. And some people bought these burnt brandy balls and were so delighted with the burnt flavour that they came back for more. And of course, eventually they were all sold out. And my father could never bring himself deliberately to burn brandy balls. So that was an example, really, of David's business sense, which was much more adventurous than my father's. I don't think my father was a good businessman at all, really. And as Juan mentioned earlier, he didn't really want to take over a confectionery business, but being the oldest boy when grandfather died, he didn't really have any choice. Our auntie May, who, as Ron mentioned before, took over the accounting side of the business, she was much more business-minded than Dad was.
Mm. And she eventually became a partner in the business. And strangely enough, she also came temporarily to our family home in McFarland Street to stay for a while, but she never married, and she stayed until she died.
Yes, she was part of our family.
Yes.
Mm. Now, you mentioned that they were sold by weight. Were the sweets sold loose, or were they bagged?
No. When people bought, they were displayed in jars on the shelf in the shop, and people asked for 6 ounces or 12 ounces of brandy balls, and we would weigh them out and tip them into a paper bag and sold them in that way. Nothing was pre-packaged. Completely different from the present day.
Extremely labour intensive.
Yes.
And I imagine there'd be a huge variety of different colours, for instance.
Indeed, yes.
Lovingly displayed in these jars.
Yes, that's right. And of course, at certain times of the year, at Easter and at Christmas time, then we sold special lines appropriate for the season. At Easter time, of course, we sold Easter eggs, which were manufactured in the factory.
These were chocolate Easter eggs?
Chocolate Easter eggs. They were cream-filled and covered in chocolate. And, in fact, the cream was white, of course. I'm not sure what the cream was made of, but it would have been some.
Yes. And it had a yellowish tinge, so as that when you opened the cream egg, there was the yolk.
Yes, that's right.
Inside the egg.
That's right. Yes.
Yes. People may remember some of the names of these boiled sweets that were sold. And there was brandy balls that Jim has mentioned, raspberry balls, barley sugar, which was put through a machine so it came out in a twisted fashion. Mm. Walking sticks, that was peppermint walking sticks, was probably very well known because of their association with Christmas.
Mm.
They were
sold in different sizes.
Yes.
The small one was sixpence, the bigger one was shilling, and then we had special orders from some people who bought a 5-shilling walking stick, which was about a yard long.
Yes. I think it was 7 and 6 pence.
Was it 7 and 6? yes, it could have been that. Mm. And it was so big that it was sold with a wooden splint underneath so it wouldn't break.
Yes. They were very fragile as regards being broken.
Mm.
And of course you didn't break them until you were ready to eat them. And then it was okay. Other lines that my father made was something called coltsfoot rock and fruit rock. And we looked up recently the origin of the name of coltsfoot. And it comes from a particular plant of that name, but the flavour I always thought was aniseed flavour, because people would come into the shop and say, "What's coltsfoot rock?" And we would say, "Well, it's a type of aniseed flavour." Fruit rock was more popular, I think, because people knew that there would be different fruit flavours. Other lines were Irish moss tubes, and then peppermints, including peppermints that were called curiously strong mints. And these were extremely tiny little squares of peppermint, but they certainly were very strong. And some people would buy them because they would see them as a very good remedy for indigestion. We've mentioned Easter eggs. Other lines were coconut ice and coconut candy. And of course these were very popular. And at Christmas time, Jim, marzipan fruit.
Marzipan fruit, yes. They were very popular. The mixture was
coconut
and something else. I can't recall what the ingredients were, but the primary ingredient was coconut, and they could be moulded into different shapes. And at Christmas time, Ron and I and my brothers would be busy making these into the shape of a pear or a banana or an apple or a lemon, and then they would be painted with...
Each one had to be hand-painted.
Hand-painted.
With the appropriate colour.
Yes.
For that particular fruit.
Yes.
So this was another very labour-intensive business. Yes. But of course, I think we were paid as helpers. As schoolboys.
I seem to remember I was paid 9p an hour.
Yes.
For marzipan.
Yes.
Yes, the marzipan fruit that we made.
Not coconut.
When we worked in the shop, we were paid a modest wage. 9p, of course, wasn't all that princely a wage, but was much more than you'd think in today's. I suppose what would be the equivalent?
Well, it's hard to know, but it's certainly, we weren't paid pocket money. Our pocket money was what we earned at the shop.
Yes.
And that was it.
Yes. And,
so...